Back here on Dodger Weekly on the voice of Fort Dodge, KVFD, AM 1400 return show after being out last week. I was on vacation, and it's good to be back. It's good to be joined, as always, by State Senator Jesse Green of Harcourt, making a return appearance on the show. Senator Green, thank you for the time. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you taking the time to visit with us.
Hey, thanks so much. And actually, it's a pretty good time. Right now, the leadership is negotiating the budget, and so I'm not on appropriations. I'm on ways and means. But with a lot of those budget negotiations, I haven't been a part of that, but more busy with governor appointee positions and approving those. And so that's what I've been staying busy with.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly there are some bills that we want to talk about that have kept you busy as well. But before we get into all that, I just kind of want to ask your thoughts on, you know, this is your first session, you're a freshman senator. Just kind of give me your impressions and your takeaways from this session.
Well, it's been a very interesting experience. It's been a growing experience in so many ways. A lot of people said that campaigning and getting into politics your first year during COVID, we picked a heck of a time to get into this, but I have nothing to compare to, so this seems like normal to me, and it's been quite the wild ride. But early on, the transition was kind of a little bit difficult because we came right into session with the education conversation, which is the most sensitive conversation. And anybody that knows me knows that I'm a strong school choice advocate. And so that threw me in a whirlwind of quite the conversations, and emotions were high during that time. And so that was kind of a difficult time. But ever since then, it's been amazing. I kind of know what to expect now of different opinions and how to handle some tough situations, tough decisions. And it's just been such an honor, and we've gotten so much done this year. This is the strongest Republican trifecta since 1973, and I've been able to push the yes button on so many issues that Republicans prior to me would just give anything to have had the opportunity to push the button on, whether that's constitutional carry, school choice, the Life Amendment, back the blue bills. I mean, just every single week there's been an amazing topic that we can ship right to the governor and get assigned into law.
State Senator Jesse Green is our guest here on the program. Senator Green, you talked about school choice there. Now, I want to make sure that we're clear and that I'm clear. When I think of school choice, I'm thinking of that means that you can choose a private school but still have public money put toward a private school. Am I wrong in that assumption?
That's correct. There's been so many different angles at school choice. So this year, the legislature addressed open enrollment. Not everybody prior to this year has had open enrollment. There was five school districts in the state that open enrollment wasn't allowed. And that was kind of shocking to a lot of people in Iowa. So we addressed that issue. The other issue was getting kids back in the classroom. A lot of parents and families didn't have that choice in their child's education to have in-person learning for their students. And we saw that was just plain as day that there was some major consequences that were happening of not having kids in the classroom, so that got addressed. And then, of course, the other component to school choice is my angle in the Republican platform issue, which is called ESAs, education savings accounts, vouchers. The governor called it students first scholarships, but it's where we give a portion of our SSA dollars, our state supplemental aid dollars, to follow each student into whatever environment they choose. And I fundamentally believe that's the best way to increase competition, increase the quality of education for everybody, regardless of income, regardless of backgrounds.
State Senator Jesse Green is our guest on the program. I want to switch gears a little bit, Senator, and talk about House File 857, which is one that a bill that says that funding for small and medium meat lockers would be available to expand. As I understand, the meat lockers of that size around the state are backed up a year to 2 years, and this would give them an opportunity to provide more service to more customers around the state.
Yes. So this is one of the most exciting bills for me. During the campaign process and last year, COVID revealed a lot of weaknesses in our system. That's the nice thing about hard times and high pressure times is it really shows us as individuals in society what things we need to work on. And it was just obvious that when the state was completely shut down there for the couple weeks that we were 100% shut down, that we had plenty of supply, quality supply, and we had high demand. But here we had piles of dead pigs laying outside of hog buildings and private meat coolers that were filled up because we had a meat processing problem. And to me, that shows that we need to either deregulate or invest in small and medium-sized lockers. And just the whole meat industry shouldn't shut down because five meatpacking plants ran into a little bit of trouble. So this bill gets at any locker that employs 50 or less people can apply for these grants. And a portion of these grants goes towards expanding meat lockers. A portion of it goes to apprenticeship opportunities for people to learn the trade. And I'm just really excited about this bill. It's right now we're kind of fighting for $750,000. And to put that in perspective, in the education budget, education uses up $750,000 every 2 hours. So we joke around in the Capitol about this bill. If we could just get a little pencil dust of the education budget, this bill would take off and really have an instant impact on a vital part of our economy.
That's a very interesting comparison you make there. And something else I want to draw off that you said, you talked about how the five major meatpacking plants, when you have issues with one of them, that's what brought on a lot of the issues in terms of processing pork and other livestock last year during the pandemic. Does that, with this bill kind of pointing towards that, does that not point at a much larger problem that there are basically five companies that control 90-something percent of the market?
This is, in last year during the campaign, J.D. Scholten, he was a Democrat candidate for Congress. I really enjoyed hearing his take on this issue. It was very consistent when he was on the campaign trail shedding light on this issue, and I appreciate that he did. But, of course, he came at it from a left point of view, which is a top-down, let's bust up these companies and make them into smaller companies. That was kind of the theme of his message that I kept hearing. And that, there might be some sort of place for that. But, of course, me coming from a conservative standpoint and from the right standpoint, I want to see more competition from the bottom up. And I don't think we can do that through mandates. I don't think that's a healthy way to do it. But I certainly believe in incentives, incentivizing young kids to think about this this potential career for their futures. So we can tackle that through educational opportunities, through apprenticeships. And there's a part of this bill that we establish a task force to create a curriculum for meat processing so that community colleges can utilize this course and further educate kids and have more of those opportunities. So I think this bill helps to address that. It also sets up a framework that if Washington sends us much infrastructure money through Biden's infrastructure plan, that we can throw those dollars into this grant as well and just help fund it even more.
State Senator Jesse Green is my guest this morning. He's a freshman senator from Harcourt. Senator, File 581, that's a bill that I know you guys have been discussing that addresses deer population management, which seems to be, as an outsider looking in, now have lived here for about 18 months, I see as a problem here around the state. This would then expand the hunting season. You would add a hunting season in January for management purposes. I really think this is one that kind of is a no-brainer because, I mean, I live in Fort Dodge, and I see the same group of 5 to 10 deer, I guess you would say, on the side of the road every day in the morning when I come to work. So, to me, this is pretty much plain and out there in the open that there is a overpopulation problem in the state.
Yeah, so like with many issues, We tend to come at this from maybe an emotional point of view, or we take a little sliver of our experience and we kind of project that onto the whole state or whatever. And at the heart of this bill is we set up a very intensive study conducted by Iowa State, the DOT, the DNR, the insurance division. So all the parties that are affected by this issue of deer population are going to come to the table and get a firm grip on what the situation is in Iowa regarding our deer. So that's a first important thing for people to remember. The second important thing is that it widens the avenues that already exist to help farmers and people manage deer populations within their area. You still have to call the DNR. You still have to prove that your property damage. But they're usually pretty generous about allowing some tags to be used. But the last component of this bill that is new is that there will be a depredation season at the end of late muzzleloader. So if your county has not used up its allotted tags that the DNR has set forth to be a healthy amount of tags to lower our deer population, private people can apply for these depredation tags for $2, and you might be able to get 10 tags, you might be able to get 20 tags, you know, depending on how many unused tags there are, and you'll be able to use that for antlerless deer only. And the two most controversial parts of this bill, I believe, or the things that kind of made me scratch my head just a little bit, and I had to really think this out, was we lowered the civil penalty for poaching antlerless deer from 1,500 down to, I believe, we settled at 500. And the reason we did that is because endangered species, for example, that's a $750 fine. It just seemed a little strange that we would have a $1,500 fine for does. But so that was I got a lot of emails about that topic. And the second topic that was kind of that I got a lot of emails about was that we would, during depredation season, we would allow high power rifles to be used. And so a lot of people had in their minds, are we going to be party hunting to use these depredation tags? And then how safe is that to party hunt with high power rifles? And of course, with any issue, we always look to worst case scenario on many of these bills, which is fine. It's healthy to think about some of the unintended consequences. But again, I think those were unrealistic fears with this bill, and I don't believe people would be party hunting with high power rifles.
State Senator Jesse Green is my guest here on the program. One last topic I wanted to touch on was a bill that I know you worked on and floor managed. It's Senate File 589, which is a bill that would allow an adopted person who has a birth certificate that's the result of the adoption to then obtain a copy of their original birth certificate. In doing some research on this, and because I'm not from Iowa, I probably didn't know this as a result. I had no idea that a person could not get their original birth certificate if they were adopted in this state. That shed a lot of light on this deal for me.
Yeah, that was very surprising to me. And actually, I wish I could have saw some sort of comparison to other states, how they handle their birth certificate situations. But there was a group of people and one lady in particular that has been working on this bill for 7 years. And it just goes to show how sometimes the process is hard to navigate and to get bills through. But yeah, there's so many tools available now for people to research their ancestry or their backgrounds, and this just widens the avenues that are available, but also makes it so that people can get their original birth certificate. It was at one time that biological parents could make it so that they would be on a no contact list and that was kind of the idea behind it, is that some of the biological parents did not want to be known and so that option is still available with this current bill, but the reality is that there's so many avenues for people to figure out their family line and it's not such a social stigma on that issue anymore. And so this, I think combination of a lot of factors just opened up the pathway for this bill to finally become a success. And it was really neat when it got passed, just how many people were in the gallery that this issue affected, and it meant so much to them. So it was definitely one of the highlights of the session.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I guess my other takeaway from that whole bill was that it's been in the works for 7 years. With it being in the works for 7 years, is that an indictment on the process?
I didn't dig into exactly why it took 7 years, because it didn't seem like it would be that complicated of an issue. But from my perspective, but then again, I'm just a freshman. What do I know? But the more I've learned and seen this process, it just goes to show that our way of government, or our system of government, is designed to make bills fail. And some could argue that's a bad thing, but I think most people, if they kind of humble themselves and realize that we do want government to move somewhat slow, because we've seen many examples of where government does make bad legislation, and that has such a huge negative impact on citizens' lives. But at the same time, we want government to be flexible enough to really respond to obvious problems when they creep up. And through this process, it's just really helped me appreciate and value our system of government, and just how brilliant our founding fathers were to set up the structure that we have, because it really keeps the public's interests safe and secure. And usually at the end of the day, if we pass a bill, it's probably a good bill, because there's 9 steps it's got to go through to become law. And at any point of those 9 steps, it could fail at any point in time.
State Senator Jesse Green has been my guest here on the program. Senator Green, thank you again for the time. Good to visit with you. Good to hear firsthand perspective of what's going on in the Iowa House and Iowa Senate. Certainly continue the good work there, and we appreciate you coming on the program with us.
Thanks so much. It's truly an honor to serve you guys, and it was a pleasure to speak with you again.